There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Welcome to NFL Live, presented by Courtyard by Marriott.
Snowy Indianapolis today, continuing to be the epicenter of the NFL, the annual NFL Combine, medical evaluations, interviews, and workouts, all part of the process, well underway now here at Lucas Oil Stadium. The top defensive player in this draft, indisputably, Ohio State's Chase Young. He is here, but not planning to work out. Young will wait until Ohio State's pro day on March 25th. His people confirming that this week. And perhaps Lions head coach Matt Patricia prepping for the Wonderlic test, the number 2 pencil in his ear and ready to go. But Detroit does have that number 3 pick in the draft. And guess who has the shortest commute to the NFL scouting combine? He's already here in Indy. And that, of course, is Colts head coach Frank Reich. We are happy to be here for the second straight day. We're here all week at the NFL Combine. I'm Wendy Nix, Adam Schefter, Lewis Riddick, Dan Graziano, and Mike Tannenbaum. Mel Kiper Jr. and Todd McShay will also join us this afternoon in just a bit. Our top story, though, last night, representatives from the NFL owners and the NFLPA meeting here in Indianapolis for just over 4 hours, trying to come to some resolution on a new collective bargaining agreement. Here's a look at what's on tap today, though, in Indy at the Combine. Ron Rivera, Mike McCarthy, and Mike Zimmer all have media sessions. You will hear what they had to say. McCarthy, by the way, joins us as well. So, too, does Bruce Arians. And the running back and offensive line prospects will speak to the media. We have already heard from the top quarterback prospects. Well, just after 1 a.m. Eastern time, the NFLPA Assistant Executive Director of External Affairs, George Atala, posted this tweet. The NFLPA Board of Player Representatives voted to send the proposed collective bargaining agreement to the membership for a vote. There has been reaction this today from Russell Wilson a bit earlier. The NBA and MLB are doing it right. Players come first. All NFL players deserve the same. We should not rush the next 10 years for today's satisfaction. I vote no. It is a proposed 10-year agreement. Russell Wilson, not the only player on the no side of things. Take a listen to what Marquise Pouncey from the Chargers posted on his Instagram account.
Man, this is so crazy, man. I vote no. Our NFLPA, the dudes at the top, the leaders, man, that shit all that. They ain't looking out for the best of the players. And if y'all want my vote, the Pouncey twins vote no. And if any player on any one of our teams, if y'all hurt for rent money or anything while we go through this lockout, call us. Man, we got way more money than what they had back in the days. We ain't got to worry about that. All the vets on each team, stand the up. Stand up. Show these guys that we care about them. Man, I care about all you young players, and I love you guys to death. I ain't going to let y'all down. Trust and believe. They trying to sign a deal just so these sitting the president can go around and smile and say, I got something done. You ain't get done.
All right, Dan, I will start with you. I know you've been covering this process from the outset. Is there widespread opposition, or is just the opposition quite vocal? That is clear.
No, it's fairly widespread because, I mean, that vote of the player reps came down 17-4, 14 against, and one abstaining. So it obviously is not overwhelming in terms of the support for the deal. There are some players who are upset about it, who feel it doesn't go far enough in terms of establishing off-season guidelines that would help offset the potential effects of a 17th game. Players are opposed to the idea of playing a 17th game, and in the meeting with the owners last night, there were players that were vocal about it. You guys need to do better on the other end. You need to reduce and improve off-season work conditions even more than this deal already proposes to in order for us to agree to do this 17-game thing that we don't want to do. So that's where the crux of the dispute is among the players who don't like this.
And there were various opponents to various issues, right? There are economic issues here that I think disturbed some players. You had some off-season issues where Aaron Rodgers wanted the offseason shortened even more than it was and objected to the passing of this last night because of the way that they structured the offseason. He wanted more dramatic changes that he didn't get in the end. And so, look, no labor deal is going to be perfect. And it's never going to work out the way everybody wants. And there's some players that obviously don't like it, don't like the 17th regular season game. And the NFL has tried to do its part to then say, okay, well, we're going to have 12 fewer padded practices, bigger roster size, one less preseason game. It's not perfect, but right now it seems like it's a deal that makes sense.
One of the things that's interesting to me, Dan, is the fact that you have a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers pointing out the fact that they want the offseason workload reduced even more. During the season, some of these quarterbacks who are having issues with young players, particularly wide receivers, who aren't able to really step in and carry the load and really be able to get on the same page as some of the quarterbacks. I mean, how much offseason time is there left to still reduce at this point in time to where it doesn't affect the quality of the product on the field and it doesn't let down some of the quarterbacks as far as young players who aren't up to speed as far as their development is concerned? I'm interested to hear what their stance is on that kind of thing.
And I think the owners, that was the owner's answer. I'm sorry, Mike, when that was brought up last night was, you know, that we've already gone far enough. We're going to hear from our coaches if we cut it even more. We're going to hear from our coaches already. So they push back on that. But the crux of Aaron Rodgers' problem is not about that, the preparation. It's about health and safety. If the addition of a 17th game to the schedule increases the injury risk by, let's make up a figure, 10%, then they want to see what you've done in terms of practice schedule and off-season workload that offsets that 10%. Because if signing a deal that exposes me to greater health and safety risks is something that is obviously a lot of players have had an issue with.
And going back to Am's point, there is no perfect deal. We all know that. But with that said, 60% of the NFL players make the minimum, and in this proposed agreement, a minimum player over the next 3 years would make it an additional $495,000 over what they're currently making. That is a lot of money, and when you get into the weeds of this deal, there's going to be a couple extra jobs in terms of active roster, a couple extra jobs in terms of the practice squad. They're talking about HRA accounts for retired players that go on for a couple decades. So again, I know this deal isn't perfect, but there's a lot of good things in there for the rank and file for the players that make up, again, the majority of the rosters.
Well, what's interesting now is, close or not close, and again, 17-14 and one abstention is where we landed with the NFL player reps. Now it goes to the full player, you know, all of the players. This is what happens next. They will all vote. It takes a simple majority. What is the expectation?
I think the expectation is that it'll probably pass, and I think the reason is what Mike was just talking about. When you look at what this deal does for the rank and file NFL players, you know, it does improve the quality of life for some of the guys on the back end of the roster. I mean, practice squad guys not only get raises, they get tuition benefits, they get 401k, you know, options. I mean, like that's
and the practice squad grows,
and
the practice squad grows.
So I think Mike's point is absolutely correct. When most of the players in the league look at this, they'll say this is a positive thing for me. I don't think it's going to be unanimous, obviously, but I think the expectation is it'll probably pass.
And right now, though, here's what's really interesting from a GM's perspective. There's three teams out there, most notably, as the graphic was showing, when you look at Tennessee, Dallas, and Tampa Bay, each of those teams may have two players they would consider franchising and maybe transitioning. So right now, the agreement isn't signed, so you have to operate as we are in the last year of the CBA. So when you look at players like Dak Prescott and Amari Cooper possibly being franchised and transitioned, it's very difficult to run a team right now in this very unique circumstance.
You know, it is interesting, though, because right now I'm just going to put my ex-player hat back on. And, you know, and it's interesting that Maurkice Pouncey makes the statement that he does, because really that is what will drive players to go ahead and accept a deal, whether or not they feel it is the best possible deal they can get. I mean, that's the cold, hard reality is the fact that many of these guys will quickly see their bank accounts dwindle if they start missing game checks and missing time. That's just life. And look, I commend Maurkice for saying what he did. And if he's true to his word and he says, look, and I have no reason to believe that he's not, then that's great. And that is something that they need to discuss amongst themselves. Because I'll tell you this, during my time, being one of those guys who was the bottom half of the roster guy who was able to continue to make football teams but not able to necessarily break the bank, the prospects of not getting paid is very real and will force people to do things that maybe they don't want to do, but they feel as though they have to do.
I think that's an important thing for people to understand. Like, it's obviously not going to be a perfect deal. Anytime there's a deal like this struck, both sides are going to wish they had gotten more. But when you talk about the players, they're not probably willing to strike and miss games. And if you're not, then you really can't take it all the way, right? At some point, you've got to accept this is the best we can do. And obviously, there are plenty of players that don't feel that way. They feel that there was more time, that they could have pushed harder for some things. But they voted to approve, so there's obviously at this point there are more players that think it is.
And Dan, to put that statement into context, based on what's been reported, we're talking about somewhere between $4.5 and $6 billion over the life of this contract. So, again, it's not perfect. 17 games is problematic from a health and safety issue. I think the league has taken reasonable measures. But we are talking about upwards of $6 billion over 10 years. That is a lot of money.
Well, again, a reminder, the current CBA is set to expire March of 2021, but you certainly don't want to get close to that deadline. If this deal is approved, it will mean labor peace, although not unanimous, for the next 10 years with the NFL and its players. Our Jeremy Fowler reporting that projected number one overall pick, Joe Burrow, will meet with the Bengals today. He met with reporters in Indianapolis yesterday, tried to put to rest any talk that he's not interested in playing in Cincinnati. He said, "I'm not going to not play." Here's Bengals head coach Zach Taylor on Cincy's plans with that number one pick.
I think we can make a decision whenever we want, but I think it's necessary to use every day that we get, you know, and there's no reason to be premature with the decision. We're here. We want to make sure that we know everything we can about these prospects worthy of that top pick, and we'll use every second we can. Right now, it's all the options are on the table, and it's a great position to be in.
I agree.
Well, a quick sea change here. We got Mel Kiper Jr. with us for the first day. Happy to have him at the Combine with Ty McShay as well. They will be here all week. But, Lewis, I'll start with you as someone who's been in these meetings. If you're the Cincinnati Bengals and you're meeting this week with Joe Burrow, what do you want to hear?
Yeah, I think naturally you're going to want some clarity as to these comments. Finally, once and for all, where you meet to talk to him face-to-face and just kind of get that out of the way right now, because obviously it'd be the elephant in the room. Like, what exactly did you mean by that? And I think it's important, you know, from my standpoint, to really establish a friendship here, or not necessarily a friendship, let's just say a relationship, as far as what exactly it is, Joe, that made you so successful at LSU under Joe Brady. What was it that clicked for you? Because if you're dead serious about drafting this player, which by all accounts that they are, that's what it really is going to take in order to really see the return on investment in drafting him that you want. It's a partnership. What is it that clicked with you? How were you taught in a way that really resonated with you? What is it that got the best out of you besides the fact that Ja'Marr Chase is an animal? Okay, we all know that he's maybe the best wide receiver in college football this year. What is it that helped you, and then really kind of yourself telling him about the kind of things that you would like to do with him, the kind of direction you're going to take the franchise, so you get off on the right foot, put the rest, the speculation concerning whether or not he wants to play there, and really get down to it, whether or not this guy is good for us, and should we go ahead and invest the number one pick in him?
And if I'm the Bengals, and I studied this past year, and you look at the development of Joe Burrow and how he handled, I mean, he went from basically a guy who couldn't even get on the field at Ohio State, transfers to LSU. He's a game manager. It's nice. It's cute. He's going to be there for a couple years. Hopefully they win 9-10 games, to winning the national championship, the Heisman Trophy, and being the best player in college football and arguably having the best year of any quarterback in the history of college football. So what he did in handling all of that pressure in 1 year and the confidence that he has gained, if I'm the Bengals, this is my guy. I've got Tua, who I think, Tua Tagovailoa, who is just as talented, maybe slightly more talented when they're 100%. But Burrow to me, Mel, without the durability issues and questions, he's got to be the number one overall pick. So my whole focus is, how do I make sure that he's comfortable and happy and excited to come into our environment? What do I have to do between now and late April to make sure that he's our guy?
And they made that decision. I mean, they had to make that decision early with Tua's injury. So you know who you want. He's done plenty. He's done more than enough at LSU to go from what he was, as you said, Todd, to what he is now. And he never missed a beat. He never had a hiccup. He never had an off game. You go back to the Auburn game, he still was successful. You think about the numbers he put up, over 71% in all those games during that regular season. The play he played in the playoffs, the way he performed under pressure when expectations were through the roof. Again, he didn't have a misstep. And I think if the Bengals made this call, I would think a while ago, because of Tua's injury, it made Burrow the centerpiece.
He's their guy. He's going to be their guy, okay? And he's got all the intangibles that they want. And I think when he stepped to the podium and publicly said, I never said I wouldn't play in Cincinnati. I'm going to play wherever I go. I'm a ball player. That's what I do. I think that just sealed the deal. I think that meant that he was going to the Bengals. Now, the interesting part here is what do the Bengals do with Andy Dalton then? Because now they have to move on from him and find a trade partner. And when we look for what they might get back for him, we go back to 1 year ago at this combine where basically the Denver Broncos traded, I think it was a fourth-round pick to Baltimore for Joe Flacco, mid-round pick. And I would expect that the Cincinnati Bengals will get the same thing back for Andy Dalton. Once they do that, then we'll say yet again, just more evidence that Joe Burrow is the number one overall pick. And a guy whose girlfriend's from Cincinnati, who's from Ohio, who can make the drive home to his parents, it's all in place.
I do think it's important, though, that Cincinnati gets at the crux of what it was that clicked for him. Because, look, Joe Burrow didn't all of a sudden just become a great player on his own because he just decided, I'm going to play good at LSU. And I didn't play that well at Ohio State. And I'm going to change my fortunes from being a guy who was a late-round pick to an undrafted guy to a guy who could be the
first overall pick.
Let him rip. Exactly. As you know, it's more than that. So I just think this is a kind of a fact-finding mission in a way to kind of really foster a relationship that I think Cincinnati needs to take advantage of.
And the receivers developed from the previous year to this season. They came through more consistently.
Which is something that they all need to take into account in Cincinnati and go, we have to provide all this stuff now.
Right, put those pieces in place. Yeah. And to that point, Lewis, Burrow produced an FBS record 60 touchdown passes last year, leading LSU to its first national title since 2007. What a difference sitting here today versus last year made for Joe Burrow. One of the other quarterbacks that certainly gets a lot of attention here, Tua Tagovailoa, still recovering from a hip injury, but expecting some very good news soon. The number two ranked quarterback in the draft expects to receive full medical clearance in the matter of a few weeks. Tua has already spent a big part of the combine week getting examined by doctors and medical staff.
It's been a process now. We went to the hospital at 10 yesterday in the morning. I was the last person to leave. So we went there at 10 and I was back by about 7:49 p.m. last night. So right in time for the informal interviews. Up to this point, I've been rehabbing my butt off. After March 9th, when I get clearance from my doctors, then it's full go up until my pro day.
All right, Shefty, too, has been clear about his own comments regarding his recovery. What's been the league's reaction?
Listen, they want to see how he's going to be healing all along. And it's not just now. There's going to be more testing that he's going to undergo leading up to that pro day. And it'll be a process all the way up until the draft. And I think no matter what the tests show now, there are still going to be durability questions about him, period. You've got an injury there that, again, has a history of recurrence. He's got the ankle injuries, the hip injury. I think teams are going to have their doctors thoroughly check him. That's what the combine most of all is about. Forget about all the on-field drills. It's about the medicals, and it's about him going through the testing and meeting with the team's doctors and getting some sort of prognosis for his future. I think the questions are not going to go away, no matter how good he feels and no matter how positive he is about his recovery.
Talking to a couple general managers and a couple medical people yesterday, progress bars. That was kind of the phrase. We want to know, okay, yeah, March 9th is a certain date. Then we're going to have the medical recheck in early April, and then we're going to send in our medical people to do their own physical. So there are so many different hurdles, if you will, that he has to jump over, and he's got to complete in order to show a team, an organization, that he is ready, that physically that he's progressing the way they want to see. Now, the interesting part is you're the Miami Dolphins. You're picking at 5. You've got 3 first-round picks. You've got 5 picks in the first 2 rounds and 6 picks in the top 70 overall. You have basically the last few years put yourself in a position to be here to go get Tua Tagovailoa. Are you going to do it? Are you going to play the game of chicken? Are you going to wait to see if someone tries to jump ahead of you? Can you get a deal done at number 3? Or do you try to move up to number 2 with Washington? Does Washington want to move out of number 2? There are so many issues that this organization has to deal with, the Dolphins and any other organization that is interested in going up to get Tua. And everyone wants to naturally wait to see
more medical information, Mel. But ultimately, at some point, a team is going to have to take a chance and probably gamble on the fact that, yes, he's progressing, but we just don't know. And that's a scary proposition when you're talking $30 million of guaranteed money.
And you said it, Miami. The fascinating part is it's Miami. And it's the Miami Dolphins who passed on Drew Brees. And we talk about Tua as a left-handed version of Drew Brees. And here they are sitting there making this call again when you fast forward. Different organization, but still the Miami Dolphins. They're deciding this. And they may not be able to just sit at five. If the medical looks positive, they may have to be aggressive and go up and get them. And all of a sudden now, are there other teams? What happens with the Chargers? What happens with Carolina? What happens with Indy and others? Do they effectively move up ahead of Miami? It's going to be really fun to see how this plays out.
I think the most important thing that jumps to my mind when it comes to Tua right now is I start hearing Bill Belichick's voice, and it's going to be about doing your job. And by that, I mean this. When you're here at the Combine now, as far as Tua is concerned, let the medical people do their job. Let the medical people really look over the information and try to project reasonably when he's going to be healthy, what his prognosis is for the future, and don't you try to play doctor as a scout and as a GM. What you need to do when you talk to him is really get inside of his head also, right? Because he's already put out some, let's just say some notes here as far as how he feels about himself, which is, I wouldn't mind sitting behind somebody and letting myself heal and learning the game, because some of the great quarterbacks have done that. He has said that, and I would really want to start digging into that. Tua, what do you think is best for you? Because ultimately, he's going to be, it's between him and the people who are coaching him. That's what's going to decide whether or not all these draft maneuverings and all that stuff proves to be worth it. Because all that right now, that's just deal-making. The point of the matter is, where's this kid at inside of his own head as well, which is what I'd be trying to find out now.
Todd talked about notable milestones. March 9th, when he hopes to be cleared medically. April 9th, when he hopes to have his own pro day, where he'll finally work out. And that's, of course, barring any unexpected setbacks, which you just don't know. And so new head coach Mike McCarthy takes over a Cowboys team that led the NFL in total offense in 2019. Just the third team since 1970 that a team changed coaches after that fact. The other two instances, Dick Vermeil's two retirements, first after his 99 Super Bowl title run and again following the 2005 season. Here is our Susie Culver with head coach Mike McCarthy.
Thanks, Wendy. New era underway for the Cowboys with Mike McCarthy at the helm. On your checklist of things to do in the offseason, where does getting a new contract done for your quarterback rank?
Oh, it's definitely near the top or at the top. It's business. You know, you go through this as a head coach. You learn this in your early days. You have to just be able to separate the business component of the National Football League. And, you know, and that's what Dak is going through right now with our organization. And, you know, and I think confident, like everybody, that it's going to work out.
Yeah, Stephen Jones has said, you know, timing depends on the CBA, and there's other deadlines that are coming up. But how challenging does it make it for you as the head coach?
Well, I think like anything, you just got to keep it in perspective. You know, if we were coming into this with a brand new offense, brand new language, I think that obviously the challenge would be bigger. I mean, that's not the case. You know, the offense will always be built around making the quarterback successful, and that will be the case with Dak. So he will be the feature player. So the terminology will be very similar. I think Kellen's doing a great job of trying to marry some of the things that we've done systematically in my past and pulling it together with what's been in place there, and really in putting his version of the offense on too. So that process has been fun, and there's been communication with Dak, and so I think when he does get in there, we'll be able to just pick up and hit it.
It's a blessing to have a lot of talent on the offense, and also a challenge that you have Amari Cooper, is also a free agent. As you've watched film in the offense, how does he fit into the whole picture?
He fits very well into the picture. Big play production. You can see, I think really, you know, having a full year in the offense, I think you can see the way he improved last year, because, you know, playing only a half a year the year before. So, Amari's an excellent fit. And what I've always looked for in receivers, can he play inside and outside? He could even play in the number three slot. So the ability to move your receivers around, Randall Cobb, no different. I thought Randall had a great year in Dallas, you know, last year. So the ability to move those guys around is very important. And Amari's, you know, has done a lot of that already.
And you mentioned your play caller in Kellen. How different does this all feel for you to not be the play caller, but also to be meshing systems?
Well, I mean, the play caller, you know, I went through it one time before and that, and I'll learn from that. So I'll be much better this time. The meshing of the system has been a challenge. I mean, I've had plenty of moments when I'm thinking, what the hell am I doing here? Because I've been in the same offense since 1989. So I've been in the same language since 1989.
Right.
So this has been a change. I mean, there's a number of things. I mean, when you call Sally's been a screen for 30 years. Now it's a three-step drop. So
you're adapting to
totally.
To everybody else.
Yeah, I'm studying. I got homework every night. So it's been fun though. It's a good change, and Kellen's changing too. I mean, there's things that if we think it's cleaner on a way, you know, I've done it in the past, we implement that. But for the most part, you know, we want to keep as much as we can in place because the offense was so productive last year.
Jason Witten has expressed that he knows playing a 17th year as a Cowboy is up in the air. And you also have Sean Lee, who is also going to be an unrestricted free agent. How challenging are those type of decisions for you guys who have, you know, really been a foundation of the organization?
Oh, no, definitely. I mean, it's always a huge challenge. And I think even more so for, you know, for Jerry and Steven, because it's a family business and family is very important to the Joneses. You see that right away. I mean, you see that in the interview process. So that, you know, just the way you go through those situations is important. But, you know, we're still talking through the roster and, you know, Jason's situation and, you know, Sean obviously being a free agent. So, you know, hopefully things will work out.
Thank you for spending some time with us.
Good to see you, Susie. Thank you.
Jerry Jones and company have a number of players scheduled to hit free agency during the offseason, highlighted by Dak and Mari Cooper on the offensive side. On defense, they've got Robert Quinn and Byron Jones. But the good news, Dallas has nearly $80 million in projected cap space. That is the fifth most in the league. The NFL pushed the date that you could begin to franchise players from yesterday until tomorrow because of the ongoing CBA talks. Either way, whatever that date is, and we expect it to be tomorrow, what are the chances we see Dak Prescott franchised?
Well, I think Dak is going to get franchised, but before we get to that, I mean, you have to clear up what's going on with the CBA because you can't talk about it without laying out some context there. Basically, teams now have to operate on last year's rules. So each team right now will have two tags. A franchise tag and a transition tag. So if you're the Dallas Cowboys, you can tag Dak as a franchise player. You could tag Amari Cooper as a transition player if that's what you decide to do. Now, if the players approve the new CBA, which we think is likely but certainly not a sure thing, then at that point in time, it would go back to one tag. So you could see a team tag a player like Dak Prescott and Amari Cooper and then have to withdraw one of the tags on one of the players. So it creates an unprecedented type of situation here that we haven't seen before. So when you bring up the Dallas Cowboys and you bring up Dak Prescott and the likelihood that he'll be tagged, yes, I think he does get the franchise tag. But then the question becomes, do they keep the transition tag in Amari Cooper? Well, they can't if the new CBA is approved. So while there are players like Russell Wilson and the Pouncey Twins voting no, Amari Cooper should be voting yes.
Yeah, he's got
as quick as he can right now.
On his front lawn with the big vote yes sign. Mel Todd, let's talk about the draft for just a minute. The Cowboys will pick 17th. We know about Dak and Amari, their situation. What needs they need to try and address in that first round?
Defensive side of the ball for me. And I think that's secondary. You think about a Byron Jones. You think about what Xavier McKinney at the safety spot, who is a hidden gem that people don't talk about enough. It was supposed to be Grant Delpit, safety LSU. He was going to be the top guy. He had the ankle injury. Xavier McKinney all over the field making plays for Nick Saban in that defense. C.J. Henderson's a cornerback out of Florida, really good in coverage. Not as good a tackler, but coverage-wise, he's phenomenal. And you think about A.J. Epinesa, pass rushing defensive end. You can kick him inside the defensive tackle. Had a great finish to the season at Iowa. So I think a defensive player, Todd, would look really good in a Cowboy uniform. Some of those guys I mentioned, I think, could be in play at that point.
Yeah, and if you're not able to get a deal done with Amari Cooper, then maybe you're looking on day two. If you go defense, let's say it's Xavier McKinney, then in the third round, I think wide receiver, this is one of the deepest wide receiver classes ever. It may set a record for the most receivers taken in the first round, and may set a record for the most receivers taken in the first three rounds. I've got 20 players right now at wide receiver that belong in the first three rounds. So in the third round, you can get a guy like Van Jefferson, who we saw at the Senior Bowl, who just showed up, and he's not, you know, he's got good size. He's got average speed, but the dude just separates late and catches everything in his area code. So, to me, with Van Jefferson, the third round, Michael Pittman, the wide receiver, Michael Pittman Jr. From USC in the second round is a possibility. There are so many different options on the offensive side, especially those skill positions, that I would go defense first, and then day two, revisit the offensive side.
Yeah, pass rusher, corner, wide receiver probably is the order in which they go in. Pass rusher, they're not going to be able to get a premium pass rusher when they pick. Safety, look, I mean, there are some good players. Now, remember this, too. Remember, Dallas was flirting with trying to get Jamal Adams to come down there. So they know that they need somebody in the middle of the field in the back end. No question about that. As far as Amari Cooper is concerned, this one, as much as we talk about Dak Prescott, that one's one that I think, that whole contract situation is one that I think bears watching even more so because of the fact that look at how some of the things played out on the football field late in the season with him and why John Gruden let him go. Why the Dallas Cowboys right now have not signed him? Why the Dallas Cowboys in a pivotal game against the Philadelphia Eagles in a crucial moment decided that Amari Cooper just needed to be sitting there on the sideline? I mean, this is a very interesting situation. See, it's funny how people evaluate players and then value players because they don't always go hand in hand. It's not going hand in hand with Dak Prescott. You evaluate him one way, but you can't seem to be able to establish a value for him. You evaluate Amari Cooper one way, but then you're not really valuing him the same way. And with Dallas in particular, that seems to be at the crux of their problems right now. And I wouldn't be.
Got to be going on. Right?
Exactly. There's a disconnect.
Third down conversions.
There's a disconnect.
Their offense is so much more productive with him in there, but there's.
In crucial moments.
Yes.
That's right.
And keep in mind a couple other things with Dallas. They're going to lose Byron Jones in free agency. And could you think of any teams in the NFC East, the Cowboys rivals, that could use another wide receiver?
Yeah.
Let me think.
Yeah, I would imagine it's going to be very difficult for them to get Amari Cooper unless GMs think, because of how deep the wide receiver draft is, you know, the value of drafting someone and paying him what we're going to pay him is much better than what we would have to pay to get Amari Cooper.
And keep in mind as well, we talked offense, but on defense, Leighton Vander Esch, the injury that he sustained, not having him on the field, really impacted this football team dramatically. He was a phenomenal rookie. He was going to be the centerpiece. He's out. People don't talk enough about what Leighton Vander Esch's loss meant to that football team in general. They didn't have an identity on offense. They got to get one. So there were a lot of different issues beyond just personnel that the Cowboys have to fix.
Sure. All right, first night of the 2020 draft, April 23rd. Cowboys again picking 17th. We've got five teams with new head coaches for the 2020 season. Mike McCarthy as one, you heard from him, and Ron Rivera holding previous NFL head coaching experience. Rivera spent 9 seasons as Carolina's head coach, highlighted by a 15-1 campaign in 2015 and a run to Super Bowl 50. Here's Rivera on his plans for the draft.
Before we do anything with the number 2 pick, we got to see what happens with the number 1 pick. And so once that pick goes on, then we'll go from there. But again, as I said, everything's an option. I mean, we're, you know, as far as in talking with Kyle, we've talked a couple of times already what, you know, situations potentially be. But the truth is, we got to see what happens in front of us.
Well, and then this from our ESPN Nation reporter, David Newton. Rivera says the Redskins will bring in quarterbacks Joe Burrow and Tua Tagovailoa. Says all options are on the table. So, Mel and Todd, if Tua gets a clean bill of health and you are the Redskins, do you take Chase Young, arguably the best defensive, not arguably the best defensive player in this draft, or do you think about Tua?
I think you have to, first of all, assume that Joe Burrow is going to be the first overall pick. And if that's the case, now you're looking at Chase Young, who's, in my opinion, going back the last 5 years, as talented and has as high of a grade as any other edge rusher in the draft. So you're talking about like Nick Bosa, Joey Bosa, Myles Garrett, that kind of elite talent. Now, Tua Tagovailoa, if you have the medical information, your staff says, hey, he's cleared. Personally, he's an upgrade over Dwayne Haskins, but you have to know your owner, and I don't think that you get the head coaching job knowing that Daniel Snyder is telling you, okay, we're going to bring you in, Mel, but Dwayne's got to be the guy at quarterback.
Well, you think about the number 2 pick, how valuable that pick is. If you want to go up and get Tua, you can do it before the draft. Philadelphia went up and knew they were going to get Wentz or Goff, and they were happy getting either. I think when you look at Chase Young, I think the key there is the late season. how quiet he was in those final three games when they let somebody else jump up there and get to it, knowing they got a ton of needs, the Redskins do. A lot of holes to fill. So you can go a variety of ways. Just take Chase Young if Burrow goes one. Take Tua if you get medical clearance and let him go like we just saw Steve Walsh and Troy Aikman. You're talking about Josh Rosen giving way to Kyler Murray. So it's happened before. If the grade is significantly better for Tua over Haskins, and it probably will be, if you feel like Tua is too much of a risk and you like Haskins, then you maybe get offers, Adam, to move off of that pick and get a lot in return.
Well, you could do that. But if you're the Redskins and you are moving back, you are saying, yes, we're going to accumulate picks, but we're not going to be in position to go get Chase Young unless you want to move back and then try to move back up again to ensure that you get a player like that. And, Lou, you said yesterday that the Redskins love Chase Young.
Yeah, they
do. So if they love Chase Young, you may not play around with that, and you may not get cute. But if you want to float it out there and entice the bidders to come up to try to go get one of the quarterbacks, have at it and see what the value of the pick is.
Yeah, especially considering the fact that, look, I mean, this is a team that has some nice pieces on the defensive side of the ball, but it's also a team that could use a plethora of picks in there, and that number two spot may be in play. I know they like Chase Young. I would bet my life on the fact that they like Chase Young. I'm just telling you. Okay, but the fact is, there's some other good players that if they were to move out of that spot that they could use as well. And look, corner is one of those positions that they could use desperately. And Jeff Okuda will be sitting there. And that's a guy who right now, who, if you watch him play, is a franchise-altering type of cover corner. So it'll be very interesting to see just whether or not they sit there. And look, Mel, you've talked, I've heard you say numerous times, and I agree with you, late in the season, Chase didn't look like the Chase Young who we watched earlier in the season. And that doesn't mean that there can be a number of different reasons for that. But the fact of the matter is people right now are looking for data points in order to justify what they want to do. And if they want to move out of there and somebody comes up and says, we'll give you a bunch of things, that's exactly what they'll point to. They'll say, well, here's a reason why maybe we did this deal. And the fact that we have another player at a premium position like corner, if Okuda is sitting there, that we could take.
And if a team comes up to number two, you have to assume they're coming up to get Tua Tagovailoa.
Right.
And Joe Burrow would have been the first pick. So now, let's say you move back to five, Miami. You still, Jeff Okuda, the cornerback from Ohio State you just mentioned, you still have Chase Young, who would be available in that 3-4-5 scenario, and Derrick Brown, who's, in my opinion, probably the most underrated player in this entire draft, defensive tackle out of Auburn. So you're getting, and I know defensive tackle is not exactly what they need, but you're getting one of the three best defensive players in this draft if you move back to five. Beyond that point, the level of talent starts to drop off in my
opinion. Thing I will say, though, is this. I would be shocked. I will fall out of this chair and roll
Don't
down
do
these
that.
Stands
do not do
if
that.
They don't draft Chase Young. I'll just tell you that.
All
now.
Right. Well, don't. Someone make sure that doesn't happen. All right,
getting
the last
another
time,
surgery.
The Redskins used a top two pick, by the way, 2012, when they moved up to take RG3 with that number two pick. Snowy Indianapolis, but just fine here inside Lucas Oil Stadium as we make our way through the 37th annual combine here in Indianapolis. Workout scheduled to begin on Thursday, but there have been plenty of news, especially as we continue to monitor a new CBA. Bruce Arians is here. He spoke to the media today and joins NFL Live coming up. He'll talk about the future of quarterback Jameis Winston and what the expectations are in that situation. Meanwhile, the NFL perhaps moved closer to another decade of labor peace on Wednesday. Player representatives voted to send a new deal already approved by ownership that includes a 17-game season to the full union membership. Now a simple majority of some 2,000 players must accept that agreement for it to go into effect this year. Josina Anderson has been following this and monitoring the reactions of a number of players who are involved in these negotiations. Josina, let's start first with what you're hearing.
Well, Wendy, the first thing I was told was that after the NFLPA Executive Committee met with NFL leadership last night, they did not have an additional vote and that their initial 6-5 split against still stands officially. And I also talked to one player rep of the 32 this morning who told me after that meeting occurred that some of the committee members did meet with the 32 reps at a hotel last night, one, to discuss whether they felt like anything changed after talking with ownership, and two, to discuss whether there was any wiggle room. And the biggest point of contention in that room still remained the the presence of the 17th game, and that there were player reps who were very adamant that they should not have a 17th game regardless of pay, and that there was still talk as to whether they could fight for extra concessions on quality of life with regards to the offseason training regimen, with regards to the training camp program, or just reduced practices, and even using the example of the 2011 lockout year when they were able to have increased scoring specifically in the first two games by an average of 8 points per game, regardless of the contracted season, and also just expressing concerns as to whether they're setting a precedent by conceding too early. But nonetheless, as you said, 17 of those player reps still moved to move the vote to full membership. But one of those player reps telling me this morning that, quote, I feel like it's too rushed. But apparently that is the negotiation strategy of owners, and apparently it has worked, Wendy.
Joe, I know you also talked to a very high-ranking player representative who said what?
Well, that high-ranking player rep just basically said to me that they feel like the new terms that are negotiated right now in the new CBA proposal only were negotiated at the start of last season, and that prior to that, that only occurred only because many of them were not in the room, and that initially that the 17th game was a non-starter, and that they went on to say, quote, in their opinion, that they were only able to get the votes now through fear-mongering. But obviously, Wendy, dissension and disagreement lingers. We're hearing that from Marquise Pouncey and Russell Wilson. So we will see how things proceed and how long it takes to actually ratify a new CBA, Wendy.
Okay, JoJo, thank you. And you're right. 17-14-1 clearly indicates this is not far from a unanimous decision. Listen, here's a timeline of what we've seen. Thursday, owners voted to approve the deal. Friday, the NFLPA Executive Committee votes 6-5 to recommend reelecting the deal. And then Tuesday, players and owners met. Player reps decide, yes, they will send this proposed CBA to the full body of players, some 2,000 strong, a simple majority now needed to pass the deal. Josina referenced Marquise Pouncey. Russell Wilson has always also been adamant that he disapproves. Adam, where exactly are we?
Well, you've heard a lot of players speak out. J.J. Watt, we could add other players to the group, and we know that they're not particularly happy or pleased with this particular deal, and they won't be voting yes. And in any proposed labor deal, you're always going to have people who are content with it and people who are not as content. If we speak to the rank and file members, they would like this deal because it raises their minimum salary by $100,000 next year, and as Mike pointed out, $495,000 over the next 3 years. That's a lot of money to a player who might be in the position that you were once back in the day, Lou,
sure,
right? Fighting
sure
for a back-end roster spot, trying to make money. There are players like Russell Wilson who clearly object to this deal and don't plan to vote yes. So the players will speak and they will decide. And a simple majority will approve the deal. And if they don't get the simple majority, the CBA is off the table and there'll be more negotiations next year.
Look, there's a real world component to this, and you just referenced that, and that's fine. Look, Russell Wilson and J.J. Watt and Aaron Rodgers and Marquise Pouncey, who, look, I actually commend for basically putting himself on the record and say, look, I'm here to help whoever needs to help in order for us in the long run to maybe get what we want. The real world issue is there are players who, if they were subjected to a protracted holdout, lockout, where they're not getting money and they're not having money come in, would find themselves in some kind of financial difficulty. And if they didn't find themselves in financial difficulty, then maybe there wouldn't be this issue, that there'd be a little bit more of a unanimous feeling towards sitting out and seeing if they can go ahead and maximize this deal. And until they're able to somehow get some kind of resolution in, as far as that issue is concerned, there's going to be dissension, there's going to be splits, and they're going to have to really work in order to get people to kind of come to their side, that being the high money players in this league. That's just a fact.
And now spinning the story forward, the focus is on three teams, the Tennessee Titans, the Dallas Cowboys, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And just to go behind the scenes, right now they're sitting here in Indy thinking, right now today, guys, we have two tags. So if I'm Dallas, I'm franchising Dak Prescott, I'm transitioning Amari Cooper. Those are the rules until we're told otherwise. So to me, it's fascinating. Adam, you used the term earlier, unprecedented, because one of those tags may be null and void in another week or two. And if you're trying to make these decisions, you're really trying to figure out who's the priority, who else we may be able to keep. And there's a lot of good players like Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill, Jameis Winston that are truly, their eligibility is up in the air. They may be free agents, they may be tagged.
Russell Wilson, J.J. Watt, Richard Sherman, no. Amari Cooper,
Yes.
Absolutely.
Double yes. Right, so yes squared. Listen, and to Mike's point, until this deal becomes official, if it does, we operate under the final year of the old deal. It's not set to expire until March of 2021. All right, there you go. The always entertaining Giants GM, David Gettleman. Daniel Jones produced over 3,000 passing yards, 25 touchdown passes as a rookie, but had ball security issues. He led the NFL with 18 fumbles. Gettleman was also asked how high the expectations are for his quarterback in year two. Here's what he had to say.
You know, why should you? Why should you put the pressure on the kid? It's not fair, okay? It's no different than the expectations your bosses have for you guys. Second year in writing reports, they expect better reports. 10 years in, they expect real good reports. So it's just, you know, I'm not putting expectations on anybody.
All right. Listen, we did it last year. We'll do it again. Play a little sounds good, sounds bad here at the Combine. Lewis, I'll start with you. Gettleman in particular talking about not placing amplified expectations on second-year quarterback Daniel Jones.
Yeah, I think that sounds ridiculous. And look, I mean, look,
that's not on the list.
I mean, look, it doesn't. With that kind of draft position that they drafted Daniel Jones in, inherently comes expectations, and it inherently comes with hyper expectations, given the fact that this is a guy who came out of the gates and played pretty darn well. Right now, they just had a coaching change. The owner has come out and said, you know, in previous years, we need to see market improvement here as far as the developing of our players and ultimately our win-loss record. And that's going to start with that quarterback, Daniel Jones, right there. So he may not be willing to actually articulate what those expectations are to the media. But, of course, it's not the same as saying whoever the person was asking the question, just like your boss has expectations, he has expectations. No, it's not the same.
It turns out it might not be.
It's a little bit different being the quarterback than the New York Giants was drafted in the top 10.
A little bit. Mike T?
I agree with Lewis. And I'm going to channel my inner Rex Ryan.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, wait. All right.
Just from a standpoint of, we traded up for Mark Sanchez. He was the fifth pick in the draft. This guy was your sixth pick in the draft. If I'm the general manager of the New York Giants, this is the Big Apple. You have Joe Judge as your head coach. You have Daniel Jones as your quarterback. They're tied together. And our expectations are we could compete right now because in New York, whether you like it or not, Dave, the expectations are high, and you stood up there a year ago and said, he played great in Mobile, in the Senior Bowl, and we're going to stand shoulder-to-shoulder and never look back. It worked for Rex Ryan and us at the Jets, and I think that's a page that Dave Gettleman should take from that playbook.
All right, well said. Is it a clean sweep?
Yeah, we'll make it a clean sweep.
All right, I like that.
I just as a former reporter, I just say I don't like when people speak to reporters in a condescending, dismissive tone.
Okay. There we go. I like the different take. Jones is 23 turnovers, short, by the way, sweet, tied for the second most in the NFL, trailing only Baker Mayfield. Let's talk about another quarterback situation, shall we? A hot topic continues to be Derek Carr's future with the Raiders. Carr was one of two QBs that finished top 10 in passing yards, completion rate, and QBR last season alongside Russell Wilson. Raiders GM Mike Mayock was asked about the performance of his current quarterback, Derek Carr.
Derek Carr played at a high level. I'm very happy with Derek Carr. What I've told everybody I've been in touch with since the day I took this job is we're going to evaluate every position every year. And if we can get better, we will. And guys get tired of me saying that, but that's really what I told Mark Davis before I took the job. And that's my mantra.
All right, Mike Tannenbaum there on the end. Sounds good, sounds bad.
Yeah, that didn't sound too good either.
You're two for two.
Yeah, yeah. And I really like Mike Mayock, and I think he's done a nice job. Here's the challenge they have. He alluded to it. Derek Carr played well. He played good. They're going in every week in a division where Patrick Mahomes played great. So you're sitting there with a good quarterback. You're trying to compete with a great quarterback. So if I'm Mike Mayock, the standards are really high. He's in a tough position. I've been there before. You're trying to defend a player that you know isn't championship worthy. And it's tough because until they get somebody that's as good as Patrick Mahomes, I think the Oakland Raiders are going to be looking up to the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah. You know what? I'll say this. I'll say it sounds good, but I agree with what Mike is saying here. What Mike's doing, he's talking out of both sides of his mouth, all right? He did play well statistically, right? He did play well statistically. And in many ways, he had his best season of his career statistically outside of touchdown passes. But the fact of the matter is, you get the feeling that they feel as though his upside is capped and he can't take them over the top in the way that Pat Mahomes has taken Kansas City over the top. So that's kind of the standard you're being judged by, which
that's a high bar.
Isn't necessarily fair, but that's just the world we live in. And if they can find somebody who they think could match Patrick, you know, explosive play for explosive play, of course they're going to take him. I think that's really what he's saying. And until they're not necessarily looking for better, but if we find it,
so
we'll
be
move
it.
On. That's right.
But what I like about it, and why I'll say it sounds good, is because he told that to Derek Carr. He told it to Derek Carr. He told it to the media. He said he's told to anybody he's come into contact with. So he's consistent. So if they do find a quarterback that they believe is an upgrade over Derek Carr and they make that move, guess what? He's been honest and true and on point in his messaging. And if they don't, then they'll continue to ride Derek Carr, a quarterback that he's praised. I'd run.
Sure.
Got no issues with it.
Carr has produced an 11-21 record as the starting quarterback over the last two seasons. The Rams made a big move in October last year. They acquired corner Jalen Ramsey in a trade with the Jaguars. The three-time Pro Bowler enters a 2020 eyeing a big, big deal. It's the final year of his rookie contract. Let's see what Rams GM Les Snead had to say on a timeline. Here's what he said. There's really no timeline on that, like when the deal gets done at this point, but we definitely like to have Jalen helping the Rams for more than just the 2020 season. Remember, they paid a hefty price tag to get him. Adam Schefter, sounds good, sounds bad.
I, you know, when you give up as much as they gave up to go get Jalen Ramsey, I want to hear, we love this guy, and we're going to do everything to can, and he's not going anywhere. And I don't hear that. Like, we didn't trade for him to have him for one season. So that would concern me as a Rams fan. It doesn't seem like he sounds convinced that they can keep him beyond this year. And if they can, you know it's going to be a huge deal because that's part of the reason Jacksonville traded him. It didn't want to pay him all that money and make him the highest paid cornerback in football. So I would be worried having given up all that I did if I were the Rams.
Yeah, I'm going to say it sounds bad too. Look, you don't give up two number ones and then just kind of, you know, engage in this kind of like verbal posturing to say like, yeah, you know, it just gets done when it gets done. Yeah, we'd like to have him past 20. No, you'll have him past 2020. Or you'll have him past 2020. Look, Sean McVay, when he was on our set at the Super Bowl, said, look, when you question him about the fact that they don't have many draft picks, he said, no, actually we do. We have some young players that we acquired and we expect them to be long-term contributors. He's one of them. You better get him signed.
Yeah, that's a hefty tag there for one season.
I wish we had one that says, sounds awful. Here's what I don't understand. Yeah. When you give up two first-round picks and a fourth-round pick, basically what you need to do is tell the Jacksonville Jaguars, we have an agreement in principle.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going
to
hit pause.
Amen to that.
We're going to bring Jalen Ramsey in. We're going to do a contract right now. Right now. We don't have a trade until we have an agreement in principle. Because right now, you may have no player in 2021 and no two first-round picks and no fourth-round pick. That sounds awful. Not bad, but awful.
Whew, a lot of sounds something up here. That kind of day, I guess. Jameis Winston earned a dubious distinction, becoming the first quarterback to throw 30 touchdowns and 30 picks in a season. Mike Evans and Chris Godwin were nightmares for defenses as the Bucs wideouts produced an NFL-high 26 touchdown catches with over 3,500 yards. And Shaq Barrett led the NFL 19 and a half sacks, becoming the first Bucs player to lead the league in sacks since that stat became official in 1982. The Bucs have cap space over $83 million projected. Aside from Winston, they have several potential free agents on defensive side, highlighted by Shaq Barrett. Their biggest priority to improve a pass defense that finished 30th in the NFL last season. Here's Susie Culver with Bucs head coach Bruce Arians.
This time last year, Bruce Arians and his staff were pretty confident that they could help Jameis Winston reach his potential. You talked about improving mechanics, getting him more weapons, improving the defense. What was most challenging about the process?
I think sometimes just the decision-making. You know, we did all those things. He improved dramatically, deep ball throwing, his accuracy, his footwork. It's just some decisions. And I think sometimes in our offense, the first year, it's hard. You know, but I would have liked to seen a little more progress in December.
Yeah, I think if you ask Carson Palmer, he would say, this is a tough offensive system. So what needs to happen differently?
You got to protect the ball. You got to protect the ball. You got to make better decisions and lower the risk. You know, we always, everybody talks about we have this down the field offense. Every offense has three levels to it, so there's short passes in there, too. You don't always have to throw it down there. But just make better decisions.
Jameis made news recently. He had LASIK surgery. What have you heard about how that went and how he's feeling and the impact?
Everything I've heard, it went good. You know, I haven't talked to him, but you know, it's just, that's one of those personal decisions. I mean, no one told him to go get it done, but he did squint at the scoreboard a lot. I think he got tired of everybody hollering at him for squinting.
So Jameis will be a free agent in March. Lots of decisions for you guys to make. What will be the process be like for you and your GM, Jason Light, to make the best decision for the team, you know, free agency and the draft?
Mm-hmm. I think every year you have to do all your due diligence on what's and who's available. Is it making your team better? For us right now, our priority is keeping our defensive players. You know, we've got so many free agent defensive guys that are really good players that we had a great Todd Bowles did a great job with our defense at the end of the season. So we've got to keep that together. And obviously the quarterback question.
Yes, 19 free agents overall. What do you anticipate this team looks like next season?
I would think defensively very, very similar, maybe even better. With Devin White having a second year and all those young DBs growing like I know they will, and keeping those pass rushers. I mean, the key is keeping the pass rushers.
And you mentioned Coach Bowles, and he made great strides with the defense, but if there was one weakness, it was the big plays. So when you self-scout, what's at the heart of giving up too many big plays?
Sometimes taking too much risk. You know, no risk and no biscuit. So we blitz a lot, and sometimes you're putting those corners out there on an island, and they're going to get beat.
So new uniforms.
Yeah.
This is just wondering how much input you have.
None whatsoever. And I do have style too. They didn't ask me a little bit.
That's what I was thinking. Coach, always great to see you.
Too.
Thanks.
A quick look at the on-the-field workout schedule here at the Combine. It gets underway tomorrow. The quarterbacks and pass catchers from 4 to 11 Eastern. Heisman winner Joe Burrow elected not to participate. Bama quarterback Tua Tagovailoa will miss the action. He, of course, recovering from his hip injury. So with Burrow and Tua out, we're going to talk about the quarterbacks you do want to watch when these workouts begin. Mel, let's start with you in Washington's Jacob Eason.
Oh, he's got a rocket arm, Wendy, and I'll tell you, he can spin it. And he's had some really strong performances, formerly at Georgia, settles in at Washington. You watched him and you were convinced, boy, this guy could be a top 10 to 15 pick. Then things would go awry. Bad decision, poor throw, not real precise with some throws. But I'll tell you what, if he could ever string from first quarter to fourth quarter, some of those performances we saw this year, he would be a guy you could look at as a really good starter. Quarterback in the NFL. Size and rocket arm is going to make him a potential late first round pick.
Yeah, he's loaded physically. Jordan Love is another quarterback that has all the tools. I think when we look back 5 years from now, he easily could be the third best quarterback in this class after Burrow and after Tua. Now, Jordan Love, study the 2018 tape if you want to like him. That's when he was effective. He lost 9 starters from that 2018 class to the 2019 group, and he also lost his head coach and his coordinator. They struggled against LSU. He didn't have his confidence, but this guy has the tools to be a good starter in the NFL.
Lewis, what about Oklahoma's Jalen Hurts?
Look, I am very much so a big fan of this young man and what he did at Oklahoma. Look, his first and second down game film at Oklahoma, when he has the benefit of RPOs and play action passes, as good as it gets, he can do everything that you need him to do. The questions that I have a little bit start to arise on third down when teams know he's going to throw the football, when different pressure packages start getting after him, whether or not he can consistently deliver the football. I would not bet against this young man because I think he has the makeup that everyone wants.
I'm going to be watching Justin Herbert tomorrow, the Oregon quarterback. You see the numbers this year, they went up some the way you'd want them to in terms of the touchdown to interception ratio, in terms of the completion percentage. Had he come out last year when there was some speculation that he would, I think he would have been a top 5 pick. There were teams that really wanted him to come out last year that were disappointed that he did. This year, he's in the draft. A lot of people think he'd be a top 10 pick. Safe spot to put him. He's a quarterback. Quarterbacks are value. Teams love him.
And think about the draft on the offensive side. You look at Justin Herbert physically, he's got it all. He's got the intelligence. He's a real smart kid, but something seemed to be missing. And nobody can really identify what it is. Now, he's still going to be a top 10 pick, maybe a top 5 pick, but he's a gamble on greatness.
Again, finally, the workouts will begin tomorrow. It's quarterbacks and pass catchers. They'll be right out there. You can see it here on ESPN. Again, a reminder, NFL Live from 4 to 6 Eastern tomorrow, leading in to those workouts. We'll see you then. The Jump is next.